Michelle, and welcome to this week's episode of Finding the Funny. This episode, I'm joined by the very funny George Wang. It's a great conversation. We talk jokes, we talk family, we talk skateboarding. What? I know. So without further ado, here is me and George Wang. Welcome back to Finding the Funny. This time I am joined by George Wang.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good.
I'm glad we finally got to do this.
Yes. I know.
Yeah.
It was so funny because you're like, I'm going to have dinner with my dad. I was like, by all means. Like, I completely understand, like, family obligations.
Right. So we have a thing called Mandate Monday, which is, like, his day off and my day off. And we just go on a date.
Aww.
And we go eat all over, like, you know, one day we'll have taco. We'll go eat, like, tacos. Or we're always trying to, like, go somewhere that's unique or somewhere we've never been. Like a date. And we just kind of sit there and catch up on our week. And it's a cool thing, man. I look forward to it. I look forward to those days.
I bet. That's awesome. I see my family all the time, so I get it. It's important. And
yeah.
That's great that you do that. So I've seen you. We've been on a couple shows together, but I've actually never known. How long have you been doing comedy?
I'd say 11 years.
11 years?
Mm-hmm.
How did you get started in comedy?
Okay, so, man. So I was in college and I was looking for credits to transfer.
Okay.
And I'm not good at school. I was like one of those guys trying to go to community college because I felt like you needed to go to community college.
Okay.
So I was just taking a bunch of shit that I don't care about, like art design and, like, you know, picture history, just like dumb. I don't know what I was doing.
Uh-huh.
And then I'm just literally just like, I go see my counselor. I'm like, what do I do? She's like, pick a major. I'm like, okay, theater. I just figure like, fuck, that's the only thing that's like appealing. So I take all these acting classes. I take improv. And granted, like, it was cool. You know, I took 4 years of theater. It's not my thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were always offering, like, different things to do. And finally, one day, like, it felt like a fucking movie when, like, I was sitting on a bench and, like, there was the PCC catalog.
Yeah.
And, like, the wind started blowing. And it just such landed, like, on, like, they offered stand-up class.
Really?
For free. And I was on, like, a grant. So I was like, I could just get free classes. Dude, I took that class. And for the first time in my life, I became a really good student. Like, I was like, oh, my God, I'm studying fucking George Carlin. Mm-hmm. I write my jokes. Like, I would never do work.
Yeah.
But in that class, like, I just felt like it was, you know, sometimes you just feel like you find your thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like when I first started skating, I was like, man, this is my shit. So I remember the first day you had to go up and you had to do like 3 minutes and tell 5 jokes. I didn't have any jokes. So I told this story about my mom and dad fighting, and what had happened was my mom's way of showing that she loves my dad is like leaving food at his door. So she kept leaving cookies on his doorstep. And he would get mad because she was just like overdoing it.
Uh-huh.
So he calls me one in the middle of the night and he's just like, you know, tell your mama stop bringing cookie to my doorstep. Every day I come in, he's cookie. And then I just did this like impersonation of him getting like mad about the cookies. And I compared it to the cookie monster. You know, no more cookie. Your mom come every day. I tell her, I don't want more cookie. Every day I come, he's no more cookie. And he just sounded so ridiculous. I'm like, here's this like grown ass man yelling at me to tell my mom to stop bringing cookies. And so I tell his story to the class, and the teacher was just like, he just comes up to me and he's like, man, I really think you could develop like a legit set, like you have real honesty and all this shit. And like, so anyways, the whole thing of the class was you're supposed to build your set and perform at the Ice House. So that's your final graduating thing. And then I go and I do my set, which is this, you know, this another story I told about my family. And then the owner of the club was there.
Uh-huh.
And Jan actually is friends with my comedy coach, was this guy Duke. He's an actor.
Uh-huh.
And he goes, hey, dude, I like your dude's act. Like, we need a guy in Comedy Juice.
Okay.
Like, one of the homies dropped out of Comedy Juice. He's like, could your boy do 7 minutes? Dude, he comes right up to me and he's like, hey, man, like, I think you're the strongest comic in class. Would you want to do Comedy Juice? Like the set went well. The graduation set was fucking great.
Uh-huh.
And then now I had to go do the set for Comedy Juice.
The same night?
So it was like the same night.
Oh my gosh.
I did two sets. It was my first day I've ever done like my graduation set. And then I got a real set at the club that same night. And I fucking go and do the set. I graduate the class and I loved it. I was like, fuck, that was the best experience. But I was like, what do we do from here?
Yeah.
Like, once you graduate, it's like, I didn't know what to do. So I just treated it like a class. Like, all right, it's done. Cool. Cool. And then 7 months pass, and they released the bit on Comedy Time. You could YouTube it. It's called Father Philosopher.
Uh-huh.
And it got like a bunch of views. It was at like 60,000 views. And like people had commented on it. And so when I saw that, I was like, holy shit. Like, it was like a sign, you know. I was like, oh man, I have to really try to do this. So then I just kind of went that really fucking weird route of like just going on Craigslist, finding any weird, wonky, whack ass bringer gig. Like, I remember they did this wannabe, like, one of the first ones was horrible. It was like, I thought it was gonna kill my second time. I got booed off because they had like a Night of the Apollo style.
Oh my gosh.
And it was so corny because, like, they paid some, like, fake kid with, like, a Newsies cap to kind of act like 50s Broadway and, like, walk around the audience while they filmed him. Like, come on, we're going to see some great comedy, you guys. Come on in. We're going to have a swinging good time. It was, like, so fucking weird. Like, they were trying so hard to be the Night at the Apollo on La Brea and fucking Boulevard. And so we just, like, I forgot. It was bad. It was so bad that, like, you know, like, you went up there and, like, everyone was just booing everyone. There was, like, no support. And I remember I thought I could go up there and do my, like, Ice House act. Fuck no, dude.
Oh, my
God. They're like, get the fuck off the stage, man. You suck. You know, just yelling at me. And I remember that day, I'm like, dude, fuck this. Comedy is back. Like,
yeah.
What was that, you know? And then I just kind of like hung around, and I don't know, one thing led to another, and then I'm at the Ontario Improv, and then, you know, and then you ride that little thing, and then, you know, here we are now. So it just it definitely was a really interesting ride.
Definitely.
And I felt like, yeah, like I just kind of found it, you know. It wasn't like something I aspired to be. It wasn't something like, I loved comedy. Like, as a kid, I would listen to like Eddie Murphy A-tracks. I was like, all the George Lopez CDs. I was a fan.
Yeah.
I just never saw myself doing it.
Until it kind of stumbled in.
Yeah. Like it came in, and that was that. Like, the rest was kind of history from there.
That's awesome though. It was very, yeah. You had your serendipitous moment.
Yeah, it was very serendipitous.
How does your dad feel about being in your jokes?
I don't think he feels anything. I think the first time he didn't feel good.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was doing this like over-the-top caricature of him on stage. And I remember like my mom thought it'd be a good idea to like come, you know, surprise Junior at his play. Like, it's not a fucking play, it's a comedy.
Uh-huh.
So she drops in on this set that I'm like doing. It's like a bringer thing with my dad, and me and my dad aren't even getting along at that time. Like,
oh, no.
He hates me and I like don't like him. So here I'm, doing this whole bit about him. Dude, he gets up and walks out in the middle of the set. Like, literally I'm watching him get up and leave, and I'm like, whoa, that's such a... And I remember it from that day. It was kind of like, I mean, now me and my dad are like so close.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, at that time, it was just, we weren't really on good terms, and he didn't understand what I was doing. And now he like loves it.
Yeah.
Now I think he like purposely tries to be like a little more like funny, just in case I could like use some of his stuff.
How did your set go after he walked out?
It was okay. Like, it was a small crowd.
Okay.
It was, I remember it was like one of those like late night like bar shows with like maybe my mom was in like maybe three tables filled.
Okay.
So it was just kind of like super mellow.
Got it.
Like, yeah. But I mean, it didn't feel good.
No.
You never feel good doing comedy around like family, and it's always weird.
Do you ever change yourself for it?
Never what?
Have you changed your jokes because you knew family was going to be there?
No, absolutely not. I just got better. I got more honest with the jokes.
That's good.
Like now, like if I tell a joke, it's not as embellished as it is when you start.
Okay.
Like when you start, for me in comedy, I felt like I was like a little larger than my real personality when I started. And I feel like now the difference is like I'm more myself. Got so it. Like if I'm going to tell the dad shit, it's not some like over the top. It's just like how it fucking was, you know, like tell it how it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, my style's changed, but, you know, so has my relationship with him.
That's true. Have you noticed like life events change your style or just kind of happens naturally?
I just think like I think life for sure. And then I think more than ever, it's like really getting to know yourself. Like once you really have that great, like if you're very in tune with who you are, you're not going to want to portray yourself other than who you think you fucking truly are. You know what I mean? Like, so it was kind of trying to figure out that voice that first started that got washed, drowned out by all those like garbage shows.
Yeah.
Where you felt like you had to do more to be funny when in actuality it was just some of these rooms aren't really the best place to develop a good long form set if you're trying to be serious about comedy.
Yeah.
Because you'll get good at like maybe overthrowing a heckler or like doing freestyle shit with people, but you're not really owning in on your set like you're. And I feel like for that thing to be owned, it's got to be like at a comedy club, at a professional setting, not some like, you know, Larry's pizza shop in I mean, yeah, those places help.
Yeah.
But I mean, definitely like if you want to get like that good audience and that good, like, I don't know. It's just kind of got to be, you got to treat it a little more serious, I guess. Like it's weird saying like you got to be serious about being funny. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, it's like funny is funny, but if you want to be serious about it, you got to like, you got to just put higher standards on yourself.
Absolutely.
And you got to be like, yeah.
Very cool. So, do you have a story of like your worst bomb?
Yeah, dude. It was. It was like semi good, semi bad because. It was at the mall, in the middle of the mall. It was the Twin Hills Mall.
Okay. For
the entire mall.
Yeah.
And it was the Asian Moon Festival.
Okay.
And I don't know if you go to these super cultural events that are... Like, if you're going to a moon festival, 80% of those people are probably second language English.
Yeah.
Guaranteed. These are, like, very... like, the Chinese stuff, when, like, people are playing violins, like... It's not really the room for comedy. They're not going to understand sarcasm and like fucking tags and like, you know, it's just, you know, the Chinese culture is just very different, especially if you're not speaking Chinese.
Uh-huh.
So I get booked to do this show with my friend Kiki.
And, I love her.
It's at the mall. And I knew, like, I had to follow two like 5-year-old violinists who are like mega like influencer like YouTube stars.
Oh my gosh.
They're playing perfect, like, I mean, they're like, the guy, she's like 4 years old, she's playing perfect violin and the daughter's on the bass, and it was like very like, you know, like stuff that Chinese people would just be like, wow, like piano at 3. And here I am, like, you know, I gotta go and tell my stupid jokes. And I remember, like, I just decided to ditch my set. And I was like, I know I'm going to bomb, but I want to make it like the best bomb I've ever bombed. And I think I sent you, did I send you that clip? I don't know.
I don't think so. You sent me... I don't think that one.
Okay, so this is how it happens. I go up and I'm like, hi, everybody. And like, no one's listening at all. Everyone's eating. There's a guy picking his foot in the front row. And I go, wow, this reminds me how it is at home when I talk to my parents. Because everything I say one ear, out the other. I go, no wonder like we grew up and there's such a language barrier. Because no one tries or gives a fuck. It's just like, you just got to zone everyone out, I guess. And I'm just railing on these people, and no one's laughing except the comedians.
Oh, no.
And the people, like, who really... Like, it was like, what the fuck is going on for all the Chinese people? But the comedians were, like, dying because I was saying everything they wanted to say to their parents. Which was like, listen to me. Like, it's rude. Don't eat your pork bun while I'm doing a joke and picking your toes. And, like, one guy's clipping out coupons and, like...
Oh my
gosh. Other guy like is just staring at me like he's gonna like have like you know watching come shoot me after the show. Like it was so crazy. So I remember I just was like, all right, I'm just gonna like roast these people. And so I was just going in on everybody at the mall. And like, you know, if you watch the clip, you just hear the comics like, dude, they're like dying, and just the crowd is so stiff. It's just like, they're so just like, no one's mouth is moving. You know, it's like really like, you know, they don't understand. Like, they're like, what is this guy saying? Like, there's no talent.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? For them, they need to see piano.
Yeah.
They need to see violin. They need to see something that can be translated into like, oh, that's a amazing skill.
Yeah.
But these people don't know English. They just see this American Asian guy with tattoos. So they see me as like ABC, which is American. And I'm just yapping away. And they're like, what the is he going to sing? What is he doing?
And you didn't sing to make them happy?
I fucking was doing everything. Dude, I was singling out so many people at that thing. And I know for sure in a comedy, real comedy crowd, it would have killed.
Yeah.
But because, like, it was not that crowd, it was, a bomb.
Uh-huh.
But it was, like, a good bomb.
Okay.
Like, I left, and I was like, fuck yeah, dude. I was proud of that bomb.
Got it.
Because it was a bomb where, like, I went home, and I didn't want to, like, change career. Like, I wasn't, like, wanting to quit after that bomb.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, I'm ready for another one of these. You know, maybe I'll go do the, like, Armenian Genocide Convention next. Oh, like, who knows? Like, it was just fucking weird, dude.
But, was it, yeah, like, midday like also?
Huh?
Was it, like, a midday show also?
It was midday, middle of the day, 3 p.m.
Oh, those are the worst.
So bad. Okay, so there's two. That's the good bomb, the worst bomb.
Okay, let's hear that one.
Which was, like, the one that, like, I hated my life. Which, yeah. I don't know why I went to this show. My mom is in the middle of chemotherapy. She's going to be put on hospice. She's, like, 2 days away from passing away.
Yeah.
And I get this call, and I'm just so sad and stressed. Like, my way of dealing with things is escapism.
Yeah.
Which it's like, hit the bottle or, like, disappear or go do something. Go skate. Go do – like, I couldn't see my mom this way. And I don't – I get this text, like, hey, you want to come do, like, the iguana room or something? Some Spanish night. And, bro, my mind is not in comedy. I am sad.
Yeah.
I am fucking hurt. And I say yes.
Oh, my gosh.
So I fucking drive down there, and he makes me open.
Oh,
for
no.
One of those, like, you know, those, like, comedy caliente shows that,
yeah,
turns into the club? So your energy needs to be, like, super nuts if you're the first guy, right?
Yeah.
Or you need to be, like, that super one-liner jokey guy or whatever. And I just remember I went in there. I wasn't feeling good. Like, I had the hoodie over my head. I didn't take the hoodie off. Like, it looked more of like a rapper than I did a comedian. And no one wanted to connect.
Yeah.
It was so bad that the only time they laughed is at one moment I go, fuck, man. This is pretty bad, huh? And they all started laughing. This is pretty bad. And they're like, ah. And then now they're all fucking horny, and then like it's like that almost saved it, but it was that bad. And then I remember this dude went after, I don't want to say his name, but I can't wait to follow him someday because I want to totally get my revenge.
Oh no.
He's on there and his whole set is making fun of me.
Oh no.
And I'm just like, and I had already been years in, you know what I mean? Like, I understand if I was a newer dude, like, go ahead, but I still don't think, you don't ever kick another comic while they're down. Like, not like that. Like, you don't make a set out of it and shit. And I'll never forget that day, because that day really, really told me, like, it's okay not to do comedy if you're not feeling fucking good. Like, it's like a lot of comedians feel like they have to go out and hit a mic every night or need stage time. It's okay to do the stage time sometimes. Like, yeah, go and get it, but fuck, if your mom's dying, it's okay, dude. Don't go and do the show. You know? Like, it's not that important.
No, definitely.
Yeah.
So who are the comics that you looked up to? I know you said you listened to, like, Eddie Murphy and George Lopez. Were there other ones that you, listened to?
So my three would be, like, Louis C.K.
Okay.
George Lopez, like, early George Lopez, like right now, later, later.
Uh-huh.
And then the old Eddie Murphy stuff, for sure. Like, Delirious was, like, on repeat.
Definitely.
But I just was a fan of stand-up. Like, I could listen to, like, Chris Rock, Carlin. Like, anytime stand-up came on, it was like I could just sit there and watch that all day long. Like, I was obsessed. But, like, but then again, like, I had no interest in being a comedian. Like, it was never like, oh, I want to do what they're doing, you know?
Yeah.
Or I could do what they're doing. Fuck no. I was just like, damn, this is, I love this shit. I love laughing, you know? Like, that's always been my thing. Like, I love having a good time.
Definitely. So what is your writing style? Like, what do you sit down and be like, I'm going to dedicate this time to writing, or is it whenever it pops up?
So it's kind of like I have to be pacing back and forth.
Okay.
And I need to be literally like standing and like doing the act while I'm writing.
Okay.
So it really, like, put it this way, like, there have been mornings where I've had my door knocked on.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, even by, like, friends, like if you go on those, like, friend homie trips, like, to Vegas.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'll get up in the morning and get, like, and start doing, like, I'll, you know, they'll tell me, like, shut the fuck up, or, you know, like, is everything okay here? Like, I've had that at, like, hotels I've stayed at where, I've just gone so in a bit, so I start yelling. And then, like, the neighbor will complain, and security will come to my door, and, like, they're telling me there's a lot of yelling because I like to act everything out. And sometimes, like, I feel like the way I learned in improv and, like, especially, like, theater and shit is just, like, is to really just kind of, like, become these characters.
Mm-hmm.
So when I become, like, my dad or my mom, I'll go all out. Like, I'll pretend I'm actually on stage. But I'm writing, too. Like, I'm you know, getting on the bed and then, like, erasing that, or this sounds good here. So it really comes from, like, being very passionate about what I'm saying.
Of course.
But I'm, like, pretty lazy when it comes to just, like, sitting there at a blank page and then just trying to, like, I've tried journaling, but so busy, like, it's hard for me to keep up.
Yeah.
You know? So I just try to, like, grab shit from inspiration. Or I just kind of try to Sinbad it, where, like, it's in here,
uh-huh.
And I'll just go work it on stage, you know? Like, I'll just throw that little sandwich in between two bits I know work.
Yeah.
And then kind of see, like, where it goes.
Okay. So your style, you know, is very similar to mine.
Yeah. The fucking, you know, the inspirational style.
Yeah. Like, I've definitely, like, put my hand over my boyfriend's mouth and be like, I need a second. I need you to not talk. I'm going to go do my thing. Just deal with it. And he's fine.
Yeah. Well, and it's cool is that, like, yeah, that's why it's awesome, like, having a spouse that, like, knows your stand-up shit.
Mm-hmm.
It's, like, my girlfriend, she's a huge comedy fan.
Oh, good.
And we get along because I love her so much because we just watch comedy. And whenever I would do, like, shows, like, whenever I do those, like, house party gigs or those random one-offs,
mm-hmm.
she would come to me and she would read the room for me.
Oh.
She would be like, all right, mustache in the front row, like hella fucking pedophile. The two couples in the back, like, and she's good. Like, she's like a comic. Like, she's done comedy a few times and, like, actually has kind of killed it, just winging it, like, no material, just coming off the dome. But she's got that, like, comedic mind.
Okay.
Which I love, because, like, she'll see the shit that I don't when we go to shows. And I remember my sets got better when I would take my girlfriend, because she'd be like, oh, get the homegirl. Like, and it's such a great, like, crowd. It's such a great way to, like, break the ice.
Yeah.
When you can go on there and just, like, fuck with them a little bit,
mm-hmm.
get them to like you, and then go into your shit, you know? Like, that's more my steez. Like, I'm trying to find that connect in the beginning. So I'll go freestyle and then go into my set. Okay. I know this has nothing to do with the question. Like,
no,
I
feel
like
it's fine. I love it still.
Awesome.
So you sent a couple jokes.
Okay, so I'm going to plug my charger in real quick, because I feel like I see my phone dying.
Oh, yeah, I know.
So, sorry, my phone over, but okay.
It's all good. You sent a couple jokes, and you have a lot of jokes on your TikTok, which is interesting, because I never thought about putting jokes on TikTok. Not going to lie. But
okay, go on.
I was just saying, you have a lot of...
Why does it sound so low?
I don't know.
Hold on real quick. I am trying to get the sound. Say something?
Something.
Okay, good.
Okay, are we back?
The sound got muted. Yep, we're back.
Okay, so you sent a couple jokes. They're all jokes that you were on TikTok, which I was kind of, didn't even think about putting jokes on TikTok, so I loved it.
Good.
The first one is you going and doing comedy at a juvenile detention center. And you...
Okay, so...
How did that happen?
Dude, this one was the best. Okay, so... I get asked to... My friend Mike runs a one of those, like, detention halls. Okay. And it's basically a center for fucked up kids.
Okay.
Who literally, like, if they're not there, they're out tagging or doing crack. Or, like, okay. They need to be there.
Yeah.
He's really helping these kids. A lot of them, like, got out of juvie. So they're all, you know, they're all struggling. But they're trying.
Yeah.
And so he kept trying to hire all these TED Talk guys to come in and, like, talk some shit, like, spark some inspiration. And, man, they would just, like Mike told me, it was, like, so bad. Like, he had to stop hiring, like, types of guys. Because these kids would, like, just, you know how kids are, dude.
Yep.
You know what we did as substitute teachers?
I teach 8th grade, so I'm very aware.
Yeah. So it's like, imagine being that sub for, like, juvenile hall.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you're not going to get compliant guys.
No.
They're all assholes. So they're, like, all, like, being mean, and he calls me, and he's like, look, George, I need you to do me a favor. And I'm like, what? I need you to come in and talk shit to these kids. I go, what do you mean by talking shit? He's like, just come in and roast them. And he tells me, I'm like, why? And he's like, well, you know, we had this one seminar guy come. I flew the guy out and shit. I was like, and, like, the dude left all pissed. Like, and so he kind of wanted them to get a taste of their own medicine.
Okay.
So I just went in there, like, and I thought, they thought maybe I was going to be one of those guys. And the first dude, like, I start talking, and, like, I remember one guy already, like, he had just started to, like, he interrupted my set and started heckling.
Uh-huh.
And I already, like, had the response. Like, I had said something about his afro looking like my pubes, or, like, I was like, that is what I call Afro Samurai and shit. And, like, I just went on his haircut, and, like, man, the kids went crazy.
Uh-huh.
It was like a battle rap and shit. They're like, oh, shit, like, slamming the tables. Like, for 4 minutes, this guy was just getting laughed at.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they were screaming, woo, like, losing their minds. It was like someone threw a fucking grenade in there. It was like, it was the most, if I were to, like, say in comedy, the best 3 moments, that was That probably have to be number one, I'll be honest.
Okay.
It had to be number one, just because it was, like, not your typical stand-up setup. It was, like, a lot on the line because these kids were kind of, like, fucked up. And I know because I wasn't really a good kid growing up, so, like, I just knew how to, like, talk shit. Mm-hmm. And it felt like it was that moment where everything I had done in comedy just, like, it just all came together in that one line that just sent them howling, you know?
Yeah,
and
definitely.
Like, I put it up on the TikTok, it got like a bunch of views, and I just feel like it's one of those organic moments, man, where you just get like that Eminem shit, like that one shot, you get that one line to shut someone down, and you just gotta, it's uh-huh. gotta be perfect. That's why I love comedy. Like, if it's perfect and the punchline hits, man.
Definitely.
If a punchline, that's like the hardest hitting punchline I've ever hit. It was like a knockout punch. Like, when they start hitting the tables.
Yeah.
One guy's falling out of his seat. I mean, these are ghetto kids, two dudes howling, man. Because uh-huh. they thought it was going to be some fucking cynical, uptight, fucking nerdy Asian guy. Oh, little did they know, bro. I was like, man, I'm worse than you. And I'm like in my 30s almost. Like, I'm in like late 30s, you know? So, yeah, that was that. That was the juvenile hall gig.
Oh my gosh. That's definitely awesome.
Yeah, that was like sick.
The next joke you send, you're telling jokes to veterans.
You're a veteran?
Yeah.
My relatives are veterans too, but they fought on the opposing side. I'm actually here to avenge my father's death. I've been fucking studying you since like I was a baby, dude. I'm just looking at your picture. That's why I'm here to figure this shit out.
So, yeah, this was another good one where my friend last minute, which is crazy because this was like my most viral comedy video.
Oh, really?
And I did it like 8 years ago. And it got 250,000, I think, million views on TikTok. And it was the one thing like that blew up my TikTok. It was the first video that like really put me out there on TikTok.
Yeah.
And I didn't know I could do that shit with just stand up. I had a scene dance and shit. Like, I was like, all right, I'm in the playing field now, you know, like, all right, you know, this comedy. So then, the night I did that veterans gig, my friend called me in. He needed a replacement. It was, at a VFW. They're honoring the veterans. And first thing I walk in, right? There's so many decoration medals of honor, Purple Heart, all this shit. And I'm like, you know, man, it must suck for the Vietnamese side. Because, like, you know, they're being so celebrated for, like, kind of killing Vietnamese people.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, man, in my head last night, I was like, how funny would it be to go up there and be like, hey, how you doing, guys? We got any veterans? Oh, yeah, my dad was a veteran, but, you know, he fought on the opposing side.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, I'm actually here to avenge my father's death. Like, which one of you motherfuckers killed him? And I went into that whole, like, Chinese kung fu movie. Like, I kill you, man. Like, I just kind of, like, wrote it out. It was, like, kind of improv. And, like, yeah, they were just howling because it was, like, I kind of took that veteran thing and reversed it on them.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just another one of those juvenile delinquent hall moments where, like, it was just the right timing, the right place.
Yeah.
And I think, like, my best times in comedy were freestyle moments.
Okay.
It wasn't really jokes. It was, like, you know, like, in high school before comedy, I was, like, I really was into freestyle, like, rapping.
Okay.
I just don't have the discipline to put, like, a rap record down. And I'm not that serious.
Yeah.
Like, halfway through it, I'll be like, oh, my God, like, you're trying too hard. But I love doing funny raps. Like, that was my thing. Like, I would go to house parties, and anytime there'd be like a cypher in the kitchen, I like want to go in there and like try to battle someone. But my whole thing is, like, I love joking and doing comedy.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I knew how to like tell a joke in a freestyle, like in a rhyme, that could make like a crowd kind of laugh.
Yeah.
And I used to do that a lot at house parties. So I feel like, you know, with stand-up, it's a little different because you're not rhyming, but that same type of freestyle mentality where you like flip someone, mm-hmm. or you take a word they said and try to turn it around on them. I kind of like went into these situations with that like battle rapper mentality.
Yeah.
Where like, no, I'm serving you. Like I'm going to roast the fuck out of you guys. And so, yeah, that veteran one fucking did really good. Like that was my second most favorite moment in comedy. Just cause it was so organic, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and you felt that connection with the room where like everyone was in on the joke. And it wasn't like your material so much.
Yeah.
It was just like we were all connected. We were all, you know, they all related to the veteran thing. They all related to like, you know, but they never saw the other guy's side.
Yeah.
You know, how many times these guys, hey, man, Vietnam veteran, like, we killed them gooks. Like, that gook is like my friend's fucking grandpa. You know what I mean? That uh-huh. gook is, you know, like someone's like uncle.
Yeah.
Like someone died in these fucking wars. So like, yeah, you're a veteran, but God, like that sucks for the veteran, the Vietnamese guy who died, you know, like yeah. That's why war sucks. It's like, there's no real winner. So I went in there and I acted like, oh, one of these guys killed my dad and shit. And I'm here to fuck someone up, you know, like, so that was that. That was the whole, you know, VFW thing.
And snuck some social commentary in there also. Look at you.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Which you brought up the roasting thing, so I want to ask: Have you done roast?
I've never done roast battle.
Okay.
I personally don't. I've thought about it, but I'm just so far past it. Where like I just don't think like I would allow myself to get humiliated. Like I don't have the skin.
Okay.
Like let's say me and Steve go up there and he says something. Like a little below the belt, even though he's my friend, like Steve Lee or something.
Yeah.
I might take him to heart, you know? I might like, you know, dodge his calls after that. Like I just, you gotta have that like thick fucking skin and you gotta be ready to dish it and take it.
Yeah.
And for me, like, I just don't like losing. So I don't even want to put myself in that position where I get like roasted on. Like, I don't even want to go there.
Got it.
You know, I'm far past that like egotistical thing. With the battle rap shit, like, I'd rather do that with, like, a crowd. You know what I mean?
It.
Like, I don't want to go after you.
Uh-huh.
Well, Steph has a podcast.
Yeah.
And it's called Finding the Funny. Well, I'm sure she hasn't found it yet. You know, it's like, I don't know. You know, like, I'm not into that shit. I'm sure she hasn't found the funny. You know, those, like, George, yeah. I love the format. I love it. But I don't know. Maybe I need to find someone. Maybe I'll hit like Grant Cotter up and like ask mm-hmm. him if he wants to do something, or I don't know. Have you done it?
I have. I've
How
done.
Did you do?
I won.
No way! Who did you battle?
Johnny Stewart.
Oh shit!
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah, and it was the best part. It was a unanimous win. Like, they said, like, who goes for Johnny? And, like, the audience was dead silent. And then it was, like,
you know what's awesome is, like, I felt like that guy needed a good, like, verbal beating.
You know what's funny? Everybody told me that.
I've seen him at open mics. He's got the glove and shit. Like, calm down, bro.
Well, it was...
That's cool. I'm glad.
He'd been doing roast longer than I had been doing comedy. So it was, like, a good introduction to roast battle for me. I had a blast.
Well, it showed good writing. Good writing for you.
Thank you. I liked it. I have pretty thick skin, so I think I was like, okay, I'm fine with it. But I've done a couple like roast panels and they're fun, but it's like I already know everybody's gonna make the same jokes because they make the same jokes for every girl, so it's fine.
Right.
It was pretty
funny.
That's
dope though. I didn't know you did that, but I think I do remember that battle.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun.
Maybe at the time we hadn't done a show together yet, but
yeah, I don't think I had met you yet. I think I met you like a couple months later.
yeah, we did Nick's show.
Mm-hmm. Yes, which that was such a fun show.
It was fun, but his new one, he got the theater during COVID.
Yeah.
And I think the AC was broken.
Oh no.
And like everyone was just kind of you know, already a little skeptical.
Yeah.
You could tell, like, so it wasn't, definitely it wasn't as dynamic as the one we did, like as fun, you know?
Yeah.
Wise, like live.
Yeah, it's, I mean it was one of the first like real shows, like theater shows since COVID, I think. So I was happy he did it, but I was still like not allowed to be around people.
How did you get a theater? Like, did you think that? Like, how the fuck is a theater allowing this?
I knew that they'd had, because I had talked to him, because he wanted me to be there, and I still wasn't in remission at that time, so I was like, I can't be around people.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
I was like, I will support you from afar.
Wait, you got COVID?
No, I had cancer last year.
What?
Yeah. I've been in remission for about 100 days now.
You beat it?
Yeah.
That's amazing. What stage was it? Like one?
It was stage 2, but thyroid. So I have like a scar on my neck now.
Oh my God. That is like such a good story. That makes me feel so happy. Like, yeah. I just, you know, I lost my mom to cancer. So I'm like, man, anyone who beats that, that's amazing.
Yeah, it was the day I found out I had a show, and I went on stage and I started joking about cancer. And there's like, how do you do it that day? And I was like, I needed to laugh at it, or else I'm gonna cry. Like, I had one of two reactions, and so.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
So. Well, fucking good for you. Hell yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah. So I'm like, if you see me smiling all the time, it's, I have lots of reasons to.
Well, you're just fucking lucky to be alive, man.
Yes. So no COVID.
Thyroid cancer is like, man, I think like, yeah, that one's a hard one too, if it's like caught in a later stage.
Yeah. So, I mean, it explains why my voice would kind of, I'd all of a sudden like would wake up and I'd be at a show and my voice would sound completely different. I would lose my voice because the tumor was pushing against my vocal cords.
Oh.
And so.
Damn, how did you find?
An ER doctor.
Huh?
An ER doctor just didn't feel comfortable with the test that she was seeing and just kept testing.
So did you go in like you were feeling like, what did you feel like, a pain that was unbearable?
I had swelling in my chest and just a constant sore throat for like 2 years, but I had been going to the doctors for 2 years.
Wow.
And they just, nobody had found it. They were like, they were doing that. Of course your throat hurts. You teach, you do Cub Scouts, Girl Scouts, comedy, podcasting.
So do you feel like, what do you think it stems from? Like, did they tell you, or was it genetic? Was it food? Was it?
It might be genetic. It might be something I was exposed to when I lived in Japan. They're still like, they're doing.
You lived in Japan?
I did. I was stationed out there.
Wow. Oh, you were in the military.
I was.
Wow. That's amazing. Yeah. Like, so, oh, you're probably by that power plant.
There is a chance of it, so.
Ugh.
So we'll see.
Well, fucking no more Japan for you.
No. I still love the food. To look for the food as often as I can.
Did you see East LA Sushi?
No.
It's really good. It's a movie. It's like a hidden gem on Netflix.
I'm going to write that
down. It's pretty dope. Yeah, it's about this girl. She likes, she's like in the, she lives in East LA. She works at like a fruit stand. And like she just decides to do a 180 and open up a sushi restaurant. Or like become a sushi chef.
That's
and it's pretty honest. It, like, it sounds like it would be like a corny, like, but it's a very honest movie. It's super realistic.
I love that.
And yeah, they kind of show like, you know, they won't let her because she's Hispanic and she's not a dude and she's not Japanese.
Yeah.
But she's like so good at making sushi. But I don't know. I just thought of it after you mentioned that.
Well, I am originally from East LA, so I'm going to have to look it up now.
Go ahead. You got to watch it. East LA Sushi. It's so good. I was like, damn, this is a good movie.
You had one more joke that you sent me, and it's you talking about your dad's kicks.
This guy was the Expendables rolled into one. My parents are fighting, so my mom locks my dad out of the house. He's so pissed. Oh, this is all I hear. Alice, come on. Alice, let me in. Alice. And as it goes, it gets progressively more crazy. Alice, you know that bonus round in Street Fighter 2? The Civic? He's in there doing hurricane kicks. That's like Sakura again. He's like, freaking horror, you can in the door. And finally, dude, this dude musters up all the strength to knock the door down. And he kicks the hinges off the frame, walks in and goes, knock, knock.
So where does that
So yeah, like my dad. So my dad used to get like, you know, my dad, he's such a good dude, but he has such a bad temper. And it's just because he kind of grew up, you know, like in a really rough environment. Like he kind of grew up with a Richard Pryor neighborhood, you know, okay. Like his dad ran a brothel.
Oh, wow.
His mom, like my grandma, like the way he explains her, like, you know, your mom run a Russian, you know, like it seems like she was quite the, she got around. Okay. Grandma. My grandma was like always like cheating on my grandpa. And
she
like,
was also an entertainer, just a very different kind.
It just kind of came from this really toxic environment. So yeah. Like, and he was like, so he just kind of never knew, he's like the Hulk. Like he never knew how to like suppress the anger. So it's like, he's the best guy ever, but when he got mad, he's the Hulk.
Yeah.
And you know how like the Hulk would get mad and just say stupid shit like in a fit of rage, like he wouldn't know what he was saying, and then like after he's done like destroying the city, like, oh, what happened? There's like a helicopter on the ground. It's like, oh, what happened was you fucking like threw mom into a helicopter. Like it's just, he would get into these rages. And so I remember like I was a huge fan of like 80s action movies.
Uh-huh.
Like old Arnold movies. Where, like, you know, he always had to have, like, the one-liner and shit, you know? So I compared Arnold to my dad.
Yeah.
So the whole thing is, like, my mom locks him out of the house, and he gets so mad, he, like, kicks the door in, and he goes, he walks in, he goes, knock, knock. And he goes, looks like I forgot my key, and, like, gets the keys to the minivan. And it's like, he just kicked the door down and said, knock, knock. Like, really, dude? Like... Still out, but you know, just like dumb shit, like you know, throw like a milk gallon of milk at a milk, you know, like. And so I just used that pain and kind of turned it into comedy because they would have these crazy fights.
Oh my gosh!
You know, and I remember like just some of the things he would say when he was mad was like funny. Like at the time, it wasn't funny; it was like terrifying. But now that, like, we've all grown out of that, you know, I could kind of look back and be like, man, those are some funny moments. They're funny from where it stemmed from, you know?
Oh,
and
definitely.
So I turned that into, like, a whole 80s action movies bit. Where, like, I was like, you know, my dad is my favorite action hero. Like, that's, like, growing up, I was like, man, damn, never heard of that guy. But my dad is my action hero. Like, because he would just, you know.
You need to give your dad an action figure.
Yeah, he's definitely like action hero dad for sure. Growing up, he'd just say the funniest things. Like every time he was mad, you'd be scared, but there'd be a line you'd just remember forever because it was just so like, wow, like you can't write this shit, you know? Like this guy has no idea what he's doing or saying. He's just pissed.
Definitely. So one of the things that I find so interesting about you is that you also work as a skate coach. How did that happen?
Yeah, I'm a skate coach. I just got done, yeah, doing lessons before I got here.
Yeah. How did you get into that?
Hilarious. Okay, so, man, I had one of those midlife crises where I had lost the job I had for 10 years. I got this like crazy illness. I was like nearly freaking bankrupt. I mean, everything went just bad for me, right? My car got totaled.
Oh my gosh.
And I was trying to like rebuild my life, but in the direction of where I felt like I'm no longer going to go in these directions that don't serve me.
Yeah.
Like I need to go towards comedy, even if it means like surviving doing these little shitty $40 gigs. I got to find a way to do that many gigs to pay my rent. I'd rather do that than, like, do the office job.
Yeah.
Right? So I just decided to, like, that's it. I'm full-time comedy now. Like, I have no other option. I have no money. Like, I need to survive. So I went full on, like, just trying to do comedy. And then Martin Rizzo had mentioned this job that he used to do with a nonprofit group. Where they had these after-school programs where they would teach kids. And I have to say, Martin Rizzo, man, I love that guy because he's always been like, he's always been the guy, like, you know, it's those people that fucking believe in you when you don't believe in yourself.
Yeah.
When they tell you to go on a platform and you're like, I'm not going to do anything. And like, no, you're going to, they see it that you don't see it.
Yeah.
So this guy is like, go, man, you should, you'd be a great club leader. You could teach skating. And I was like, kind of like, eh, you know, like I just skate. I don't know if I really taught. But then it kind of was funny. I almost forgot that when I was growing up, my whole summer job when I was like 16, I used to teach my entire apartment to skate group classes.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember every week there'd be like five or six kids. We meet up in the parking lot downstairs and I'd take, the parents pay me like $20 each and I would teach them. And I was so far removed from it because of all these shit jobs and comedy. And like, you forget who you are sometimes. You lose that, like, you know, we all start out these beautiful, shining pieces of bright light, and everyone just dims the fuck out of your shine. And then you just forget who you are. It's like that movie Hook. Like, you know, Peter Pan, you forget you're Peter Pan because life happens. And I remember, like, dude, I used to teach kids, and anyways, Rizzo tells me I should apply. So I'm like, all right, I have nothing to lose. I apply, I get the job. And I was like, oh my God. And it ends up being like one of the best experiences because it was like, finally something I really want to do. I get a class. I get to teach kids. I get a budget to buy boards. I get to create cycle plans. I get to be a skateboarding teacher.
Yeah.
Like, how weird does that sound? Like, I'm like, you're there writing your lesson plans about like history. I'm there like, okay, lesson one, kickflip. Lesson two, waxing a curb, you know, like, and I learned how to do cycle plans and, you know, like, so I started working with the school, but the problem with the school is they're kind of like the Antichrist of skating.
Yeah.
Like, they want to try to get in on this thing that's cool and starting to be more relevant, but they're still the school.
Yeah.
They still don't understand that skateboarding subculture is very, like, anti-corporate, very anti-authority, anti-establishment. And that's where it didn't, we didn't see eye to eye, me and the school.
Yeah.
Because whereas I wanted to do the things I'm doing now, the school was writing me up and giving me written warnings.
Oh, wow.
For the shit that I'm doing now, which is I wanted to share the kids. I wanted, not share the kids, but I wanted to share the program.
Mm-hmm.
Part of skate community is sharing the tricks, sharing the progress.
Yeah.
Creating the, like, community. Like, it's like a big collective of skateboarders who like to film their clips. And every time I'd film my kids, anytime I'd do anything that I wanted to do, I'd get in trouble.
Yeah.
I showed a skater who, this girl skated with a bikini skating.
Uh-huh.
And I remember, like, I got, like, some sexual harassment writing up, like I'm showing kids, like, derogatory shit. And I got fed up with it. And eventually, like, me and the school parted ways. But at that time, I had already established, like, a few clients.
Yeah.
Kind of like Jerry Maguire, where, like, you know, he's not with the agency, but he's got, like, the three dudes that believe in him.
Yeah.
You know, like, had those three kids, like, who's coming with me? And those three kids, dude, I made a few videos of them with, first I made a couple videos on Instagram, and then I was reluctant to put it on TikTok, because I was like, I don't know if kids are going to relate to this stuff. So one day I just decide, I'm going to put the kids up on my TikTok. 1.7 million views.
Oh my gosh.
Then, yeah. In 3 days, this one kid. And then it was like, I check my phone, there's like 500 unread messages of kids in every fucking state, city, country wanting lessons.
Oh,
what are your rates? Do you come to San Diego? Do you come to Australia? Video clips, how do my ollies look? Teach me how to kickflip. And I was like, holy shit, I'm on to something.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just started growing from there.
Definitely.
And as of now, I'm literally like, full time, doing the best I've ever had in my entire life.
Yeah.
And I'm doing what I love. And it all goes back to that teaching in the apartments.
There you go.
It goes back to that guy that I fucking forgot where I came from. where my roots were. And like now, you know, I remember that, and now I'm, you know, making an impact with these kids. And even though COVID hasn't allowed me to do a lot of comedy, I just see it as like a new stage right now. Yeah, you know?
Definitely.
Like a lot of, like, I get to find that humor with the kids. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's what makes our classes fun.
Definitely.
Like being able to like laugh, learn, share, grow, you know?
Well.
And yeah, TikTok literally just freaking blew me up. And now it's like I'm making more of a living I've ever imagined doing mm-hmm. exactly what I've always wanted to do.
There you go.
And I wish someone told me in high school, hey, those like outlandish bursts you made just to get a laugh and disrupt the class. Hey, that's probably going to be a better fucking choice for you than any of these subjects. You know, that skateboard we took away from you for skating on campus. No one said, hey, man, one day you're going to come back to the school and coach this.
Yeah.
I didn't come from that generation where they accepted these things. And so now that I'm doing these things that I absolutely know in my soul I should be doing, I am so fucking happy, dude. I cannot even tell you, like, I am living my best life.
That's
because I'm fulfilled.
Amazing.
And I'm doing what I need to be doing. And I'm finally getting to do it the way I want to do it. I don't have a boss. I'm my fucking own boss. Like, I control the ship. There's no one's pulling my strings.
That's,
you know, and it feels great to say that.
That's the goal.
Yeah, so that's where I'm at with that. I feel very, very blessed to have that, you know? And shout out to Rizzo, man, for giving me that, you know, telling me about this opportunity, like with the school, to mm-hmm. manifest everything that's like happening now, you know?
That's amazing. And like I said, I'm messaging you, trying to get you to get my son and my nephew on boards with you.
Yeah, so. I would love to. I know. You messaged me. I'm excited.
I was like, my son's used to being around comics. My nephew is just crazy. So it's fine. But
well, I'm going to get along with your son, and then we're going to have to work on getting your nephew. How old is your nephew?
He's 4. No, he's funny. My son has gone to shows before. So they've hung out with
like
comics.
A comedy nerd.
It's funny though, but he's real quiet. My daughter's the one that's like, I'm going to do that someday.
Oh, that's awesome. What's so awesome that they have mom being able to like expose them to that shit. Mm-hmm. You know how lucky they are to have comedy. They get stand-up comedy exposed to them. And mom does comedy. Like, you know, I swear, I'm so happy my dad had an Eddie Murphy 8-track. I don't know where I'd be without that thing.
I know.
I used to go in the middle of the night and listen to Eddie Murphy on 8-track in his little like record room. And that was the only thing. I wouldn't listen to, he had all these like good records, like The Who, right to Eddie Murphy. I didn't give a fuck about anything. I was like, I just want to laugh, dude.
I love it.
And I would just put that shit on and laugh. Just, I still remember laughing to that tape, 8-track.
Definitely. So you've done a lot of shows with Crazy Woke Asians. How is that?
They're awesome. I love my friend Kiki, man. She's a... Crazy Woke Asians is dope because they're really trying to push that Asian platform. Mm-hmm. And that's all that she's about.
Oh, definitely.
It's just because, you know, I feel like they're just... there hasn't been a lot of Asian comedy community. Everyone's just kind of doing their own thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a cool thing because it kind of brings all the Asian comics. Although it does kind of single out non-Asian comics a little bit. But we are putting a Mexican dude on the next one. Benny Mena's coming on. So like, I'm like, all right, now we're branching out. And we got the crazy woke Caucasians next, you
there
know?
You go.
Like, yeah. So, I mean, yeah, it's a cool thing. She's just trying to help, like, Asians have a voice in comedy, and she's doing so much work.
She is. I know. Me and her always talk parent stuff.
Yeah, she's got like when COVID was around, man, they were like selling shows out every weekend, like mm-hmm. every venue you think of. Like, she just knows how to produce a good show.
Oh, definitely. And my very last question for you is, what is your end game in comedy? What do you want out of this?
I definitely want a special.
Okay.
I definitely would want like a few specials. I don't think I'm going to be like a George Carlin for sure, but I would like my own, like, I want my own, like, you know, like really good special. Like, mm-hmm. I want something to really put down that I know is like, I could be proud of, that could like literally just have a long shelf time, you know, with like being able to like connect to people and make laugh. But, you know, for me, I feel like there's two different types of comedians.
Yeah.
There's like the stand-up comic, right? They just want to go on the stage, do the special, go through the and I respect the fuck out of those guys. But I know for me, like, because I kind of started out as a skateboarder and I went into comedy, that I just, at the end of the day, like, I just want to be known as like a comedian, like, who does everything. Like, I kind of want to be like I just want to have when you think of like Kevin Hart or any of these comedians who are doing a lot of different things,
mm-hmm.
you do associate them back to comedy, but you also like look at the personality, right? Like your Steph Michelle, like yeah. Steph Michelle, like he's got stand up under his belt, but you know, he's also an entrepreneur. He's also an actor. He's also like I love comedy, but I know that's not my only avenue.
Absolutely.
And that's why I love being the skate coach. I love being the comedian. I love being like, you know, these different roles, because I don't want to be boxed into like one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's cool, like when you have these different avenues to go down, because it just makes it more unique. Like I like being the skate coach, but then these kids are like, I didn't know you did stand up. And I like being the stand up where kids are like, I didn't know you skate. Oh, you teach kids? I didn't know you teach kids. So it feels kind of cool. It's kind of like that superhero thing, you know? You got to have your Superman, you got to have your Spider-Man, but you also got to have your Peter Parker.
There you go.
You know? And I feel like my Peter Parker is skating and my Spider-Man is stand-up.
That sounds about right.
You know what I mean? Because stand-up is like, I got to go out there and rescue these people from like a terrible time.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, like, yeah. So my end game is just to, I want to leave that legacy. I want to carve that thing. Because honestly, at the end of the day, right? No, all you have left is your legacy. And all you have left is whatever you have left to leave to mankind, which is a book, a special, your podcast. Like tomorrow, if something happened, could you say you lived your bestest and truest life? Like you were standing at heaven's gates and God's like, before I let you in, did you really go down there and do everything that you possibly could do, like at your full potential? I want to make sure I look at him and be like, fuck yeah, dude, let me in. Hell yeah, bro, I'm tired of that shit. Like, let's do this. Like, let me in it. Like, I want to make sure that, like, you know, I want to die a legend. Like, I just want to leave that fucking legacy, you know? Like, damn, that dude was a comedian, a special, whatever it is. Like, and that's why it's so important to, like, just keep pushing and to keep, you know, keep putting out whatever it is you love, your passion. Just keep sharing it.
Mm-hmm.
Keep putting as much content as you can, because, like, dude, this life is a joke, man. It's like, it's we're not here forever. Might as well just do everything you can while you can and just live it up, you know? Like, yeah.
Definitely. Well,
yeah.
I love to see the rest of the path that you carve out for yourself. And thank you for joining me, dude.
Yeah, that was fun. I had a great time.
All right. Bye, guys. Thank you guys for listening to that episode. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I had being a part of it. Definitely follow George Wang on Instagram so you can see when his shows start coming back. Also, if you have TikTok and you would like to see the most adorable skateboarders in the world, as well as if you're into skateboarding and would like to see more of that community, follow him at George Wang Jr. So many really cool things on there. Also, I want to make sure to say thank you to Dave the Prophet for providing the music. His beats were provided by Curtis King. As always, I'm Stephanie Michelle. This has been Finding the Funny, and I hope you enjoy.
I told my mama on the phone, it ain't no check to check. No more Honda Civics, baby, time to whip that back. Lyrics, beats, in the hooks, I'm a triple threat. Glow up on my Jesus piece, now I'm living blessed. Looney Bin, BYE, you know we down to ride. Try to kill me with this mic, suicide. Since I got on man, all I hear is fucking lies. More money, more problems, fucking certified. Doja Cat, throw it back. David blowing back. Blowing up on Super Saiyan, but I'm fucking holding back. Never stop until I put my fucking city on the map. 3 a.m. on Ocean Air, put the pedal to the max. Fresh Prince, I'm an icon.
You know, we all start out these beautiful, shining pieces of bright light, and everyone just dims the fuck out of your shine. And then you just forget who you are. It's like that movie Hook. Like, you know, Peter Pan, you forget you're Peter Pan because life happens.